I've been doing journalism for 35 years. I define myself by my job. My old career came to an end because I got pretty horrific burnout. I couldn't go back and do that job 7 days a week, which is kind of what it was taking to be at the top of my game at the time. I felt irrelevant. I was bang on 51, very average, when I experienced the menopause. I remember thinking, do you know what? I've been messed about with my periods. I had a horrific childbirth experience and I didn't really say anything. This is not going to happen to me for a third time. I'm going to the doctor. And so I went marching in expecting a massive fight. And I sort of almost, kind of almost banged my fist on the desk.
Don't mess with me.
I want to know what's the gold standard and I want it.
Talk to me about the podcast with Cam.
So,
are you having a good time?
It started once a week and it was called Been There, Done That, Got the Podcast. Literally two midlife women wanging on about anything. Old men we've got crushes on and shouldn't have. You know, absolutely ridiculous things. But it went straight to number one in the news entertainment category on App and we were like, what?
To women who are listening to this, who feel like I'm on the brink, what would you say to them?
It's funny, you know, because when I had my kids, I said to everybody, just get back on that conveyor belt and work, because otherwise you're out of the loop. 20 years on from that, I would say...
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasco. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasco, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. My guest today is someone who's helped shape how British women think, feel, and talk about their lives, especially in midlife. She's an award-winning journalist, the former editor of Stella, Grazia, and The Telegraph magazine, and co-host of the brilliant Got the Podcast with Kat Farmer, and now features director at You Magazine. She's known for her honest, witty takes on everything, from fashion to family, grief and menopause, and she's become a powerful voice for women navigating the messy, beautiful middle of life. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Marion Jones.
Hello. Thank you for joining me in my living room on
this
sunny day.
Thank you for asking me in this gorgeous living room, this gloriously sunny day.
Thank you so much. Now, Marion, you have had an incredibly varied career and you've edited some of the top women's magazines in the country. What are you doing now? Frame where we are at this moment in Marianne's life.
Well, I guess where we are now is at a very nice stage of my life because I've chosen to work 2 days a week in an office. I'm now at You Magazine, where I jointly features direct the magazine. That was my choice. I created a job share because I didn't want to do full time. I'm the ambassador for Dementia UK. I write. I've done a podcast. I've kind of got, I don't know, would you call it a portfolio career? That sounds quite grand.
Portfolio. Be grand. We're all about embracing grand on this podcast.
Well, why not? I think I've got to a stage of my life, Debbie, where I'm sort of doing now what I would have... Not that I ever set out to do it. I thought I'd be in the same job for life, really, in the same field. I think it's just branching out and doing other things that have really made me happy and trying to get that lovely balance, which I've never been very good at.
How does it feel to try new things?
At first, scary, because really my old career came to an end because I got pretty horrific burnout when I was at The Telegraph. And that was just a terrible time over COVID. And I didn't know I was burnt out. I found out because I just kept getting what I thought was vertigo, just dizzy spells. And it turned out I eventually went to the doctor after I'd done a full day's work one day. I didn't want to go during work time. And he said, you need to go to hospital. Your heart rate is, it's borderline hypertensive. I had to go, well, straight away to kind of get a load of drugs bagged up for myself, two of which I'm still on because my heart was just pounding at a terrible, terrible rate. And it wasn't vertigo, it was my heart telling me to stop. Saw a cardiologist and he said, look, you're nearly 56, you can't go at this rate, because he asked me to rate my work stress on a kind of scale of 1 to 10, and I said it's probably 11, if I'm honest. And he just said, you can't keep on, it's ridiculous, this life's ridiculous. So he signed me off sick. I don't think I've ever had a day's sick. Yeah. It's sickness. You know, I'd never even had COVID, for God's sake. I'd never had anything. And I went from not having a day's sickness to having 6 months off, and then deciding really, kind of at the time, reluctantly, that I couldn't go back and do that job 7 days a week, which is kind of what it was taking to be at the top of my game at the time.
How did it feel to have somebody say that to you?
Well, he said it, and then my husband said it, and then two friends, one of whom is a very top political journalist, and his wife, who is in the medical profession, and they all said, are you crazy? You can't go back. And I thought about it, and I thought, I don't think I can either, and it was awful. It was awful.
Did it feel like a loss?
It was terrible.
Describe it.
Well, it's like being on a sort of fairground ride where you're spun around on a waltzer, and I felt like I'd been flung off onto my sofa with my cockapoo. No, I felt like no one was calling me. I was used to getting hundreds of emails a day, and I'd gone from wishing nobody would email me to looking at my emails and thinking, nobody's emailing me, I'm irrelevant. I felt irrelevant. I define myself 100% all my life, and I've been doing journalism for 35 years. I define myself by my job. It overrode everything. You know, I had 3 months mat leave with my first boy, and I don't know how I survived that really, because it was a terrible birth. Awful C-section, everything went wrong. I'm not even sure I was physically fit to go back, but I did, 3 months. And I just kind of clung on. I just was not prepared to give up the career that I'd really, really bloody worked for. And it felt awful. It felt like a bereavement. I felt irrelevant. I never thought I was status-driven, and I still don't think I am particularly, but it really hurt when people that you'd known and were your friends suddenly didn't particularly want to know you. Not my real friends. My real friends were amazing, and I found out who they were very much. And you find out an awful lot about yourself, and you find out an awful lot about the people around you and the support you get. So it was like a bereavement, and it must have taken me a year to figure out who I was.
How did you do that, Marianne? This podcast, a lot of what we talk about is the practical. So what did you actually do? So you're on the sofa with the cockapoo, having got the diagnosis, yeah, and somebody has drawn a line for you that you probably weren't going to draw for yourself.
Yeah, totally.
And then what happens?
I actually was approached by an agent. I thought, why do I need an agent? But at that point in time, she was a real lifesaver. And she said, you can do all sorts of things. And I'm like, well, what can I do? I've been a journalist all my life. I don't know how to do anything else. And we're talking old media. You know, I started in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really fully embraced anything. She got me kind of consultancy work again, which I'd never thought about, for brands, which was quite well paid, actually. It made you think why you were in journalism for all those years.
Not for the money.
On a pittance. But, and so I got a few jobs from her, and then I thought, well, there's another world out here, actually. And then another a friend of mine who's got so many followers on Instagram, Kat, she said, oh, darling, let's do a podcast. And I thought, podcast? Well, I haven't got a clue about what do I do? And of course, it was like amateur hour. I mean, it's nothing like what you've got here.
And I love so it.
It was ridiculous.
Okay, so talk to me about the podcast with Kat.
So
are you having a good time?
Well, we actually don't do it anymore because we've sort of just moved
you've
on.
Grown out
for
of it.
2 years, yeah. It was.
How often?
Well, it started at once a week, and it was called Being There, Done That, Got the Podcast. Literally two midlife women wanging on about anything, what you've watched on telly, the menopause, old men we've got crushes on and shouldn't have, ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous things. But it went straight to number one in the news entertainment category on Apple. We were like, I've just done it on my really old laptop in my shed, or I'd go to her house with really terrible microphones. And we honestly, Debbie, didn't know what we were doing. We were just hooting, laughing, we're drinking wine. And it just resonated, I think, with our demographic, yeah. Our, people who quite often have not really had a voice, or people for whom they were just being fed stuff about menopause, just about menopause, yeah. And not really having fun with it.
No.
And we were very much talking about, yes, we do talk about menopause, talk about ours quite a lot, but we don't just define ourselves by that.
Yeah.
Actually, we can have a right laugh. We can talk about a million and one other things, where we are in our lives. And it just resonated with our kind of core audience and went to number one. And we were getting, we were getting ads and we were doing pretty well. But podcasts don't really make a lot of money unless you're maybe with Go Hanger or, And it just got to the point where it became quite a lot of work. And then it became so popular you had to do two a week. And then it's even logistics. Oh, am I going to your place? Are you going to mine? She's really busy. I'm a bit busy. And we kind of got there, and then we just decided one summer when we'd both had a break that we'd kind of achieved what we wanted
to. You were
done. And we were done with it and moved on. But then that was another skill set that I never knew I could do or even thought about doing. It was really good fun. And so now I'm dipping my toe in lots of different waters. And then this job with You magazine just came up, and I was asked, would you do this full time?
How was it being back there?
Oh my God, I love it.
Really? Because it's everything, it's the stuff that you loved and lost.
It's the stuff that's in my DNA.
Yeah.
So, and also I hadn't realised I do miss an office.
Yeah.
When you just go in and chit chat, ooh, bar, bar,
water cooler.
Yeah. Mm. Because I have been, much as I love my cockapoo, Charlie Varley, I have been talking to her quite a lot, one-on-one.
Okay, that's nuts, yeah.
And it is very, very nice to get out, and it's quite a young team too, so I slightly feel like mum or even nan. So a lot of them are 20-something and 30-something. It's really nice to think that I can almost teach a little bit, because I'm that old, that I do feel...
That's what offices are for, I think. And I think, as we think about women, being women in our moment, I think we think about how we bridge to younger women, either the women we work with or our daughters or the partners of our sons and our mothers. I kind of think about that quite a lot.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your mum. I know that she was an extremely important person in your life, you sadly lost recently.
Yeah.
And I think about, as women, how we span generations and the women that have influence on us as we grow. Mm. So talk to me about mum.
She was my biggest influence in the world, really. And as we're recording this, it's a year to the day, bizarrely, since we lost her. She was, I mean, the real essence of what your podcast is called, she had grit and she had grace. She was about this big.
Yes, she makes you look tall. I've seen the pictures.
I'm only 5'3".
You are not. Yeah.
I'm really, really
neither
not.
Am I, but it's all stages, yeah.
We measured her once in M&S children's department. She was the average size of a 10-year-old. She was tiny, Maltese Scouser. Had come over here at 16 to marry my dad, who they met over in Valletta. He was a naval in the Royal Navy. And she had, I was the youngest of three, who grew up in a Liverpool council estate. And my dad was a drinker. It was never called alcoholism back then. He was a drinker. He liked his drink.
Fond of the drink.
Fond of the drink, fond of a one-liner. Everyone loved Dave, you know, he was always in the pub. And he basically just drank every bit of money that they both made. They both worked in the same factory. In a place called Prescott, the outskirts of Liverpool, which was just factory and
my
houses.
My grandmother worked in the Lever Brothers soap factory.
What, really?
Yeah. She did. And the first flat I ever bought was in a building in London called Sunlight Square, which was also Sunlight. Where they made soap.
Port Sunlight. Yeah.
That's where she grew up. 13,
amazing.
She was working there.
Oh, my God. I know. It's mad, isn't it? And I always remember at 5 o'clock, the buzzer would go. You'd hear it all over the town, and then literally it was like Piccadilly Circus for about 10 minutes as everybody walked back. But she was a factory worker and he was a factory worker. But when I was about 8, my mum discovered he was having an affair, quite appropriately and conveniently, with the barmaid of his local pub. Mm-hmm. And she kicked him out. And from that day onwards, she was on her own with 3 kids. And he didn't contribute a penny. He left. And I just saw how she dealt with it, I guess. I mean, I didn't know any different, but she just cracked on. She just got on with it. I remember saying at her funeral, we must have been the best fed kids in our town, because she refused to do anything like ready meals. Not like that there were many back then, but she would come home, she would walk home from the factory every lunch hour, she'd prepare tea, as we called it in the north, and it would often be stew in a pressure cooker. She'd then walk back to the factory, then walk back, you know, I'd come home from school and, you know, it'd be like a sauna in the kitchen because the pressure cooker was going on, and she'd cook every single meal from scratch. And I'd say, Mom, can we have Finder's crispy pancakes that had just been invented? She'd be like, you're not eating rubbish. And she would know the value of every single penny. She would make us walk from one end of town to another if butter was half a pence cheaper. You know, she was that she was that type. But because she was the way she was, we didn't know we were poor. She would knit everything. I hated it. I'd go to school.
Your clothes.
Oh, she would knit all my knit my uniform, my jumper, sew my pinafore. Everybody else would have gone to M&S and got their stuff from there, or Tyra's, which was like the local store. And I would be going in like a Aran Cable knit sweater, and the teachers would say, "Look at you! You look lovely." And I'd just want to look the same.
Did your dad remain in your life?
No.
Never.
He basically made a half-hearted attempt at a couple of birthdays to kind of take me out to buy me a present. He could not wait to buy me the present. I remember one time I wanted a Swiss musical box, a little ballerina in the middle that played, I think it was Love Story or something. He said, right, okay, we've got it. I'm putting you back on the bus now. I was only little. Putting you back on the bus, you'll know where to get off. Because he wanted to go for his lunchtime pint. And from that day, I must have maybe been 9, my mum found out. She went ballistic. And she said, "Do you want to see him?" And I said, "No, I don't really." She went, "That's it." And that was that. And she didn't sort of, she just left it. She's not seeing you. You can't even be responsible enough to put her on the bus. And he wasn't that bothered. And to be honest, nor was I, nor was my brother or sister.
Has it come up in later life, or that's just how it was when you had your mum? I'm asking for a friend, by the way.
Are you?
Well, my kids have... I've been divorced since they were 3 and 1, and I mean, we wonder about all of this, don't we?
We do,
we wonder, yeah, in a way our parents didn't.
It's really weird. I think of my mum as my mum and my dad. So when I lost her, it was like I'd lost sort of everything. My sister, who's the peacemaker of the family, she's the eldest. And she kind of semi kept in touch with my dad and his side of the family. I didn't. I'm actually quite good at just saying,
it's done.
It's done. She said to me, please come to his funeral. It might, I don't know, closure. She wouldn't use the word closure, my sister, but you know, that's what she meant. And I thought about it. I thought, do I want to go to this guy's funeral who never wanted to know me, never wanted to know his two lovely grandchildren, or three grandchildren, two of them mine. Why would I go to someone's funeral who's been literally no part of my life? And I said to my sister, I'm not going. And she said, I don't want you to regret it. And I've never regretted it. Never, ever. I never think about him, really.
Let's talk about midlife and feeling excited about being in midlife. Mm. So I would love you to talk about your menopause if you want to talk about your menopause, but the way we talk about it in this podcast and even as the founder of Better Menopause is in a positive and celebratory way. And one of the things that I'm really focused on is making sure that women have the resources and support to totally smash it in midlife, to do everything they ever wanted, to live, to grab life by the balls, to have the career of their dreams, to have the career that they would have liked to have had. So talk about what it is like for you and how that has been for you and how you think about that.
I think I was at the age, I was bang on 51, very average, when I experienced the menopause. I think I'd reached that age. I remember thinking, do you know what? I've been messed about with my periods. I had shockingly awful periods. I had a horrific childbirth experience that I shouldn't have had. And I didn't really say anything. And I just remember thinking, I've got all the symptoms. I've got all the classic symptoms. The sweats, a slight anxiety, they're not sleeping as well. This is not going to happen to me for a third time. I'm going to the doctor. And I was really all like this. Because a couple of my friends had said, we had a hard time with our doctor. You know, they gave us a really difficult time. You know, it's the date of your last period and da-da-da-da-da. Well, I had the Myrina course, so I hadn't had a period for ages. And I'd got that because my periods were terrible. And so I went marching in expecting a massive fight. And I sort of almost banged my fist on the desk and said, it's my menopause. Don't mess with me. I want to know what's the gold standard, and I want it. And he went, okay. And he didn't give me any tests. He actually just took my word for it. And, you know, all this, when was your last period? So, well, I don't know, because I'm on the Myrina course. So I'm 51. I'm feeling like this, and I want to be sorted. And he said, he said, it's great you're on the Myrina call because you're halfway there. You'll need this dose of HRT to go with it. I went, right, bye. And then went, felt immediately better. So I was kind of lucky in that respect. And then have just really watched what I do and what my supplements are and how I exercise. I mean, I bought a Peloton in the middle of COVID.
How unusual.
Yeah, I know. Such a cliche. Cockapoo and a Peloton. But I also did really got to the stage where I thought, this is now on me. I need to start taking care of myself.
What did that look like then versus life in your 30s and 40s? So what were the tweaks or the changes? Like, what's it like now? What do you do?
I never used to stop in my 20s, 30s and 40s. And I think I used to drink quite a lot as well, you know, because I do enjoy a drink.
Also, it was the time.
It was madness. Yeah, I mean, but very rarely, you know, my 20s, 30s went home. We just, every night, intended to go home, but somehow got waylaid by a pub or a party, and that was great. I loved it. I loved that time in the media back then. But now, I think it's just kind of listening to myself and the shock, the absolute shock I had with my health, really, really, really made me think that you're not invincible. I've now got two heart tablets that I'll be taking for the rest of my life. Yeah. I've got to really, really reassess how much I'm doing everything, whether that's work or whether it's worrying about the kids or whether it's just worrying about anything, and try and stop that. I've got a really good friend called Naheed who's helped me through it. She's a somatic breathing expert, yoga expert. This is the sort of stuff I'd have just
scoffed at. Okay, talk to you about that. I'm atrocious at this. But I do have my next sister, Dan, loves a gong bath. So
yeah, she basically teaches you how to breathe. She's written a book called Soothe. I would really recommend, because it's lots of case histories. It's all about burnout and what to do about it. And she's like a kind of breath whisperer. And I was shallow breathing. One of my symptoms was, and I wasn't aware of it, I was shallow breathing and holding my breath. And that was a real sign of stress. And it was kind of not having a great effect on my heart, fundamentally. And she kind of, I had a session with her yesterday, actually, where she just gets you to do very small movements on a mat. It's not in, out, in, out. She does different things that are quite difficult to explain, but she'll just almost get you to tilt your head in a certain way, your pelvis, feel how your bones are lying on the floor, get you to kind of think about your skeleton and then your breath. And this is the sort of stuff I would have just thought, this is absolute woo-woo, bloody rubbish. And I don't think that way now because it works. Mm. It's really worked with me. Mm. So that was amazing. Reconnecting with walking the dog for lengths of time, not just running in and out, but that has really helped. It's kind of stuff that we're all meant to know, isn't it, really? But we don't. Mm. Cutting down the old alcohol, because I think you do get to an age, like it or not, where your body and your mind don't process alcohol the way they used to. And so I will cut down, possibly not have anything in the week, and have a little bit of the weekend, or maybe once in a week and a couple of week at the weekend. But I'm always sort of, I always wish I hadn't the next day, even if I've had a couple of glasses. It's weird. I just feel slightly differently, but I don't think I'll quite give it up. And then taking supplements, of which yours have really helped the better menopause, and that is not a plug.
Tell me what you take.
The sleep ones have altered my sleep because I didn't know anything about magnesium or ashwagandha or any of those things. They have just helped to calm me, and have really, because again, sleep. I could sleep for England. I could get a medal in sleeping. Suddenly.
Stopped.
Yeah. And then, or anxiety would kick in the middle of the night, particularly as I was going through the burnout.
And was the anxiety, so Anna Jones, who you know, and I, we always talk because our background is sort of similar to yours in that we're both northern grafters, as we describe ourselves, but we talk about debtor's prison. So the anxiety that both of us have is always financially related. I mean, I know that might seem a bit nuts and you're sitting in my head.
No, it
doesn't. I'm going to a debtor's prison kind of.
I have that.
Like that.
I have that. And that is because of our backgrounds. Yes. I don't particularly think about money, and I would have said I don't think about it at all. But if there's a point where I feel anxious about it, or that I'm not going to earn, whether you need to or not,
doesn't matter.
There's that anxiety there, and I will take work now that I possibly don't need to take because I'm terrified of not working and B, not earning money. And that's so true. I mean, I thought, because I'll be 60 in August, I thought, honestly, 60, that's me done. That'll be me done.
I'm done.
Which was naive. But A, I don't want to stop. And B, it was like, you know what, is that another 7 years anyway before I even get a very small state pension? I don't think
you
I'm stopping.
You might get an Oyster card.
Yeah, well, except I don't live in London, so I don't even get that. To. It's an outrage.
To women who are listening to this, and I think there will be many, who feel like I'm on the brink of burnout, what would you say to them?
It's funny, you know, because when I had my kids, I said to everybody, ignore everything, get those fingernails grown and cling on. Do not bother with long mat leaves. Don't just get back on that conveyor belt and work, because otherwise you're out of the loop. 20 years on from that, I would say the opposite. I would say you've got to think of your health. You've got to think, this is how I feel, I could have a third of my life left if I take care of myself. That's quite a lot. And I think that has to come first now. So I would very much say, don't ignore any warning signs, however silly you think. I mean, I was falling over as I was tying up my shoelace and ignoring it for months. And that was my heart telling me, I'm about to pack in, you know. And I would have probably ignored it. I just think you can't do that if you want to have a life that's meaningful and healthy. But I would also say to women, don't step completely off. You know, otherwise you're going to be watching a lot of Netflix, which is really nice, but it's that TikTok of the afternoon clock and you're sitting and you don't know what you're going to do. Whether it's, I mean, I volunteered for a charity called Smartworks just to have something to do and to just do something meaningful. And I loved it. I've met so many nice people. And one opportunity can lead to another, even if you're not doing it for those reasons.
Well, we all need purpose.
Yeah. You do. No matter what age you are or what stage in life you are, you need purpose. And then another friend said to me, say yes to things more than you say no. Now, I was always a yes person, people pleaser. So what she meant by that is say no when it's appropriate. But
take
to
risks.
Opportunities and to take risks. I mean, you know all about that.
Yeah.
And to take the coffee. It might not be what you think it's going to be, or it might not be up your street. But it might lead to something else. It might lead to that person knowing another person who is, you know, going to be helpful to you. And just have the coffee because it's nice to have the coffee.
Have the coffee.
Yeah.
Now, the podcast is called Grit and Grace because that's my mantra.
Yeah.
What's yours?
My mum's mantra was always, it's nice to be nice.
Well, give me that. What does that mean?
That, why be nasty to someone when you can be nice? And that if you are nice to someone, I always judge a person on how they treat the waiter. And if somebody's genuinely polite, I think more of them for that. I will always be very mindful of trying to be kind. I mean, the kind's probably an overused word, but just trying to be genuinely nice because you should be. The thought of me not being would make my mum mad. And also that it's a bit of a kind of mantra that I've got in my bathroom. I don't really like mantras. The whole live, laugh, love thing makes me cringe. But it is just is work hard and be nice to people. Is kind of something that I think you can't really go wrong if you do that. And also, just crack on.
Just crack on.
Isn't
the,
a bad
says
one.
The scouser.
Yeah. Crack on.
I love it. Now, before we wrap up, I'm going to do a quick fire round. You ready for this?
I don't know.
It's easy. Okay, ready. If you could pick one skincare brand that you'd recommend for midlife women, what would it be?
That is a tricky one.
What do you use?
I use all kinds.
What do you come back to?
There's one called MV Therapy, and she's an Aussie, but she's a Brit who lives in Aussie, and it's natural and it's beautiful. But I have to say as well, you can't go wrong with Beauty Pie.
Yeah,
it's
love about
really,
Beauty Pie.
Really love great, her. Great stuff, okay. And an amazing price.
Amazing, MV Therapy, Beauty Pie. Favourite fitness or gym brand?
Peloton.
Okay. Top wellness tip, one thing to de-stress.
Breathe, learn to breathe.
Favourite influencer, expert or doctor for menopause advice and support? Who's your go-to?
Liz Earle.
Oh, Liz Earle, of course.
I love her. Wonderful. And I interviewed her last year. And she is so knowledgeable.
She's amazing.
She does her homework,
she's
and I
amazing.
Trust her advice.
Yeah. I always have a Lizelle thing. I remember Anna and I saw her at the very beginning of Albright. We interviewed her for something. And she had a child at 49,
oh, yeah.
Which she thought was menopause. And she referred to it as her autumn leaf.
Yeah.
And whenever I spoke to any of my girlfriends who were like, I'm done with contraception now because I'm in menopause, I'm like, autumn leaf.
Eek.
So I've always held on to Lizelle for that one. Favourite supplement for tackling menopausal symptoms?
Oh, you know what that is,
so
and it's
it,
yours.
So.
It's the Better Menopause.
Thank you. One beauty product you think every midlife woman should own?
Skin oil.
Okay.
For me.
Where? Everywhere?
I think, I literally put skin oil everywhere. Body, face. Get one that isn't, I know it's called oil, but get one that's a drier oil.
Not oily.
I couldn't live without serum or skin oil.
Okay. And one food or type of food that you think makes a difference to how you feel?
I start the day, and it keeps me going until tea time, with handful of nuts, Greek yogurt, chop a bit of fruit in, put some honey on. I mean, I think an assortment of nuts.
Okay.
Walnuts, almonds, pecans, because we don't often get that in our diet every day. So just whop it on a bit of Greek yogurt, bit of granola, chop a bit of fruit, honey. That's me kind of done.
Thank you. Marion Jones and her assortment of nuts. Thank you for joining me for Grit and Grace.
Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.